date is May, March, May. I wish it were May. Yeah. March 1st, 2013, an interview with Joan Irwin. This is being done here at the Academic Staff Institute under the auspices of the UW-Madison Archives and UW-Madison Academic Staff. My name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Madison Archives in their oral history program. So Joan, for sound recording purposes or quality purposes, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Joan Irwin, I-R-W-I-N.
Great. Joan, we talked a little bit about sort of the structure of this before we turned on the recording. So my first question is, knowing that you first started working at UW-Green Bay, how did you get the job at UW-Green Bay?
Okay. Moved to Green Bay with my husband at the time, who had just graduated from law school here in Madison. And moved next door, the person living next door worked in personnel at UW-Green Bay. And she said that the registrar's office was looking for an LTE at the time. And my husband said, if you can get your foot in the door at the UW system, it'd be great for your career. And my degree was in elementary education, which is not, teachers were getting laid off back, this was back in the late 70s. And a lot of schools were closing because the generation coming behind the baby boomers, there wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a good time to be an elementary school teacher. So I got the job in the registrar's office. Basically, it was a glorified student worker job, filing and helping students at the time register because they couldn't do it like they do today. Mm-hmm. So it was all paper.
Right. That was the days of standing in line, right?
Yes.
How yes. Times have changed.
Yes.
So did you stay in the personnel office and eventually get full-time employment there? Or?
No, it was in the registrar's office.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yes. And what I worked there for 24 years in that same office, and I probably had 7 different jobs, and I learned everything that a registrar's office does. And I ended up as an assistant registrar before I came to UW-Madison.
Okay, so 24 years would take us from the late 70s to the early 2000s, is
yes.
That about right?
Yep.
So there had to have been a significant amount of change in how.
Yes.
What were some of the biggest changes?
Well, besides the, where students had to actually come and fill out a form, and then we would input their courses, course by course, into what we called a terminal. That was probably one of the biggest ones. The other one was the student record was a actual cardboard record. We called it a permanent record card. And at the end of the semester, our computer center at the time would print labels with all your courses and your grades. So we would sit there, and the enrollment was about 5,000, between 4,000 and 5,000. So it's a small school. I think it's the second smallest school in the UW. I think Parkside is smaller. So we would actually take those labels and stick them on the permanent record cards. And then if there was a grade change, we had what we called, it was an electric eraser. And because you wanted to make sure that you got that grade off of there. So if you were changing an F to a B, you'd be very careful that you didn't make a hole in the record and make as best you could to get that off of there. Then you had to put it into a typewriter, and we had Selectric typewriters at the time, and there was one that was, you could only use this one on the permanent record card because we didn't want it to look like a student had changed their own grade. So it had to be all very exact and professional. And then the other thing we did is if you transferred from another school, we had to type each course and the credits onto that permanent record card. Everything was done on that card. So, and now, of course, everything is electronic.
Right. When did that change, the change to electronic or digital, did that happen while you were?
Yes, okay. While I was at Green Bay. Yep.
What were the pros and cons of that? I'm assuming there were some of each of this change from sort of manual data entry to to electronic data entry?
Well, the first change, the change to a homegrown system was a lot easier because we worked very closely with the people in the IT shop. The second change to PeopleSoft, was a lot more difficult because nobody knew it. And everything was so new, they sent us away to training. And I had no IT background at all. So it switched the whole dynamic to the user has to go out and learn how to do it and come back and figure out how all this works. So that was a huge shift for the people that had been there all those years. And you know, if you wanted to change in the homegrown system we had, you just called down to the IT people and you told them, I want this change, and they change it for you. So that was a huge shift.
Right. Right. Besides technology, well, it sounds like, there was lots of change for you if you did seven different jobs. I assume mm-hmm. as you did different jobs, your responsibilities increased, is that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's tough with seven different jobs, but what were the types of things you would do on a typical day when you were working there?
You mean toward the end, or?
Yeah, let's do towards the end as you got
okay.
more responsibility.
At the end, I was in charge of, as an assistant registrar, I had all the people that had degree audit grading were under me. And what I did is I looked at every student's record and decided whether they completed their degree requirements or not, both undergrads and grads. So that took a lot of my time. I was in charge of the diplomas, ordering the diplomas. I didn't actually do it, but I oversaw that function. And I also oversaw the transfer evaluation, which here is done in the admissions office. And in many schools it is done in admissions, but when I was at Green Bay, and I think it still is, it's done in the registrar's office.
Okay.
So those were the main things that I oversaw.
Okay. When you were at Green Bay, did you get involved in committee work or governance work?
Yes.
What types of, let's put it this way, maybe if you want to just sort of give an overview of the types of things you were involved in, then maybe I'll ask some follow-up questions based on that.
Oh.
Maybe what ones stand out in your mind, either because of their importance or because of your involvement in them, or for whatever reason.
Well, I started out just as a representative. And of course, again, it's much smaller than it is here. Then I was on what's ASEC here. And I know one of the things, there's a lot of personnel issues that we dealt with. One of them was getting sabbaticals for academic staff and for a leave of absence, which I guess is really what it turned out to be, I think. Because there's nothing in place for academic staff to do that like faculty could do it. So that I know was a big thing that we worked on. I remember a lot of talk. What really got me into it in the first place was all this talk about decoupling academic staff salaries from faculty. And that's what got me involved in governance. And we would hear about what people were doing in Madison, and that there's this group of, MASA, which it now is, but I didn't understand that back then, that, they're getting together and they're shaking things up in Madison and they're standing up for their rights and kind of stuff, and it really excited me.
But you didn't do any... You didn't have necessarily communication with the folks in Madison about what they were doing. You just sort of heard through the grapevine that...
Right, right. And I think it was because of being on that, in the governance group. What was I going to say? At the time, I considered chairing that, but that was also the same time that we were going through this PeopleSoft transition, and so I never did get the leadership position there. But,
and that was because you just knew that what was going on in your job would preclude you from doing a good job at leadership?
Right. The other thing was I was in grad school at the time, which I stopped going to grad school because it was so consuming with long hours, and I was a single mother at the time, and I really regret that I never finished my my graduate work. I should have started it earlier.
Was that at UW Green Bay? Were you getting? So I wonder if you would talk about the transition then from working at UW Green Bay to getting a job here at UW Madison. So that was probably what, about 10 years ago?
Yep. I started in 2002.
Okay. So over 10 years.
Yeah. Like I said, the whole transition working on the PeopleSoft, and the part that I was in charge of was the degree audit. We were going from that homegrown one to figuring out how you put degree requirements into this new one. So I was heavy into that. It was very stressful because there were only a few schools that were doing it at the time. Lots of schools were on PeopleSoft, but they weren't using the PeopleSoft degree audit tool. And my son was graduating from high school. He was about to graduate from high school. And I thought, you know, now is probably a good time for me to start looking elsewhere, because I wanted to get out of Green Bay. I had lived in Madison before, and I loved Madison. And I took, the head of personnel had retired the year before. So I asked him if he would have lunch with me. And I said, where can I go with almost 24 years of experience? I can't leave the UW. And I forgot to say, one of the big things I was in charge of was NCAA eligibility at Green Bay, which is, I'm also doing that here. So he said, well, he said, you could go, because Green Bay is a Division I school. So he said, you could either go to Madison or Milwaukee and do the same thing you're doing, because they're both Division I, or you could go work for the NCAA. And he said, but basically, he goes, you know, that's what I see for you, because you've got 24 years in. You're not going to go into private industry or whatever. So I came back from lunch, and there was a job posting sitting on my desk for the job, doing NCAA eligibility at UW-Madison. And when I read the description, it was everything I was doing right now at Green Bay. And the posting date had passed. So I called up right away and I said, I mean, is the job still open? And she said, yeah, it's still open, but get your stuff in right away. And I found out later that a colleague of mine who knew that I was looking elsewhere, she had seen the posting, came over. I wasn't there, so she just left it on my desk. So and I got the job.
Did it did wage transfer applicably? I mean, were you, was it, did you end up being about the same? Was it higher, lower?
I got a higher wage. I wish I would have asked for more at the time, because I was very naive about the cost of living in Madison. And I had a really nice house, and I bought a condo for the same price. So I was just really naive. But I did get more money. And it really wasn't so much about the money. It was just a good opportunity for me, and my son had been accepted here. So,
that was nice.
Yeah, so, you know, it worked out really well.
So what office or what department did this job fall under?
Office of the Registrar.
So same.
Yep.
Okay.
And it had, before it had been the people in the athletic department really did the eligibility, which is a model that's really frowned on by the NCAA for obvious reasons. I mean, there would be somebody in our office who would kind of bless it and sign off on the forms, but they were really doing all the work. And a couple things happened with the shoebox. there's another thing when the ISIS first came up with the credits, mm-hmm. On the transcript, that people really didn't have the credits that mm-hmm. they thought they had. Mm-hmm. So that's when they realized they needed to get somebody in the registrar's office that oversaw sure. eligibility.
Could we back up then to, was that something you'd been doing for quite some time at Green Bay, or was that a recent job?
I had
or
been,
part of your job?
I had been doing it at Green Bay for 7 years.
Okay.
The person that was doing it retired, and there was big changes, huge changes that from now to what it was back then.
Changes mandated by the NCAA?
Yeah. Before, it was basically you had to be enrolled in 12 credits. You had to finish 24 credits per year. Hmm. There was nothing about, are you really getting any closer to a degree? It was all about credits. Mm. And so over the years, they started looking at you have to be making progress toward degree. So they put in place percentage requirements. And then they upped the percentage requirements over the time that I've been doing this. Mm-hmm. A huge reporting that I have to do every summer about the athletes and are they making progress mm-hmm. toward degree. And it's just so much different than it used to be.
So is summer then your busiest time? Or is it all the same? Or is it all, you know?
The busiest time is right after grades come out in the spring, where I have to look at every student athlete and see, did they make their progress? So like June is a very busy month. Then August, getting ready for the sports to start up in the fall mm-hmm. is another busy time. Mm-hmm. And then the next really busy time is January. And then of course I do things all year long, but those are the huge chunks of time.
And January is because the grades come in the fall and you yep. have to make sure that they have made progress. If they haven't made progress, then they can be declared ineligible?
Yes. And then of course there's a bowl game. We've been involved in a bowl game every year that I've been here.
Right. And that bowl game is usually in January after grades. So in theory, somebody could be ineligible for the bowl if their grades came back in the fall
yes.
and they had not been, they didn't make enough progress.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume that has happened, and I don't need specifics, but I'm wondering, is it difficult for you, if someone is ineligible, having to understand that what you're following what the NCAA is telling you to follow, but you're also, the student athlete is now ineligible to do probably what they came to school for.
Right.
I'm wondering if they're, obviously decisions are made based on the mathematics of it or the,
right.
But I wonder personally, is it difficult on occasions to make those, to see those decisions have to happen, let's put it that
way.
Well,
the answer to that is no, because the way this was structured from the very beginning is that coaches can't call me, students can't call me.
Okay.
So all I do is I work with the compliance office mm-hmm. and with the advising office in athletics, because there's a number of advisors there. These advisors work with football. There's an advisor that works with golf, tennis.
Sure.
What really makes the hard part for me is making sure that I know what I'm doing, that I give the right decision. Mm-hmm. Because I certainly don't want to make someone ineligible if there's any kind of chance that they're not. Mm-hmm. So I really... And it did happen. It doesn't happen very often. High profile people that I see, either because I watch basketball or I watch football or whatever. Mm-hmm. We had a couple, this was long, quite some time ago, we had two basketball players who were ineligible at mid-year because of their grades. And they were both, I shouldn't say that. One was a freshman, I think one was a junior. But, you know, it was just very clear that their GPA wasn't up. They didn't finish enough of the courses that they signed up for. And the Big Ten has deregulated a lot of their rules. But when I first started here, I had to learn. I already knew NCAA rules, but I didn't know Big Ten rules. Big Right. Ten rules were even more strict than the NCAA. So one of them, just for an example, if you were a freshman and you didn't carry through 12 credits to the end of the term, and by that I mean if you started out with 12 and you dropped down to 9, you were ineligible your whole sophomore year because they were just taking academics that seriously. But then what happened was over the years, we weren't on a level playing field anymore because with this reporting that we have to do, it's all based on points. Were these students eligible and were these students retained? So the Big Ten rules were bringing our points way down. This is just my theory. I mean, I wasn't in on conversations with the Big Ten, obviously. Right. But we were taking a lot of hits on stuff that other schools weren't. Mm-hmm. And then another time we had a track student athlete, and he was a star here, and they were out at a track meet in California, and the NCAA says that if you are eligible when a meet or an event begins, no matter what happened, you were eligible to see it through. Mm-hmm. But the Big Ten rule is that if you have been dropped from school, you're immediately ineligible. And you have to come home. So that was a case where I had to say, this guy, he's done, and they have to get him on a plane and send him home.
Wow.
And they were not happy with me at all. But I knew I was right. And
right.
So.
Wow.
Kind of a long answer to your question.
That's great, thank you. To get back to academic staff specifically, when you got here, did you look for ways to become involved in campus governance or academic staff committees, or I should say campus committees with an academic staff component?
Well, the people that I worked with when I first got here, they would go to the massive brown bags. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what got me started again. And then, of course, at first, you know, I had a brand new job and I had to really kind of create the job. I mean, how was I going to do this and all that? So probably after a year or two, when things kind of settled down, then I started thinking about ways that I could connect. And I think one of the things that got me into it, probably just as much as the fact that I liked governance, was it was a way for me to network on campus. You know, going from a small campus that I'd been at for 24 years, I knew everybody, to coming here, I didn't know anybody. So it was a good way to network, and then started out with going to the massive brown bags, and then the representative, the academic staff assembly rep that was in my area, I never heard from him. And so I looked into it, I thought, well, who is this person? We never got updates. I never knew what was happening. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know who I was talking to. They said, well, Joan, why don't you run? Well, then I found out that the guy who was the rep, he was just thrilled to find out somebody else might want to do it because he didn't enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. So I think I was involved in that for 6 years. And then it's a really, really bright person that works in financial aid, and I said I really wanted to mentor her and get her involved, and I asked her if she would be my alternate. Mm-hmm. And now she's the rep for our area. So
great.
Yeah.
Besides the size, you know, Madison being much larger than Green Bay, are there other differences? I mean, you've been here almost 11 years now. Differences,
yeah,
between, and specifically sort of looking at it as an academic staff member, being a smaller UW-Green Bay and being a
say the first thing that comes to my mind with that question is the diversity of people here. Just because of the complexity of all the different schools and colleges that we have here, it's just a larger scale, and I don't want to say more talented people, but when you think of some of the things that are going on at this place, that, you know, we'll have a tour, MASA, we do a lot of tours of different places, and we get to know academic staff and what they're involved in, and it just, every time it just blows my mind, which is things that I didn't see at Green Bay. I'm sure that things were going on like that, but not anywhere near to the scale that happens here.
What have been, now that you've been here for a decade, what have been some of the, I'll use the word biggest issues, either for you personally in your job or being an academic staff person on this large campus?
Wow.
I guess you sort of already talked about some of the big issues in your job, at least. I mean, it's your job 100% basically NCAA. I mean, do you have other aspects?
No, I have other responsibilities.
Okay, and maybe we'll talk. Why don't we talk about that now, and we'll move to the bigger issues. You can kind of keep that percolating back here.
Okay.
So, besides the NCAA compliance, what are some other aspects of your job here at UW-Madison?
Okay, I also manage the diploma services area in our office, because I'm in the degree audit area. And the reason for that is we use DARS to determine percentage toward degree. So like what I said before, it's not just about the credits. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to see that they're making progress toward that biology major. Mm-hmm. So that's the degree audit part. Mm-hmm. And then we have, in our office, we audit and post the degrees for LNS and for the School of Ed. So I've got five people on my staff that audit LNS degrees and School of Education degrees. Then the person who has everything to do with the diplomas, ordering diplomas and that, she's on my staff. And then this past summer, we hired somebody to, as a backup to the NCAA eligibility that I do. We had a new registrar start 2 years ago, and he was just flabbergasted that I was the only one that knew how to do my job. So he would say, you know, what happens when Joan gets hit by if Joan gets hit by a bus, it was what happens if Joan wins the lottery. So we did hire somebody, and she started in July to learn the NCAA and the Big Ten aspects of my job. I'm also on the registrar's leadership team. And getting back to your other question.
Yeah, so the... another person that I interviewed today mentioned that something that seems to always come back to when you're talking about academic staff on this campus is, what is academic staff? It's a, you know, it's this huge, huge campus with folks who may not even know that they're academic staff.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's possibly something that you've noticed now that you've been on this campus, or...
Yes, definitely. And then with ASPRO, how they're always telling us that, you know, people in the state legislature don't understand academic staff. And I remember that when I was at Green Bay as well, that people don't really understand. And the scope, like I said, the scope between UW-Green Bay and here, like all the researchers that we have here, mm-hmm. that I don't think anybody had research in their title like Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And all the academic staff that teach here, as opposed to academic staff who taught at Green Bay, is, I can't imagine how many the numbers are for that. And I think it's harder on a big campus like this to educate everybody about that kind of thing. than it was when I was at Green Bay. Because you've got all these little nooks and crannies. You know, this person's out at the hospital. This person is out in Research Park. Mm-hmm. This person's over here, whereas Green Bay, the whole campus was connected with tunnels. Mm-hmm. So in the winter, you never had to go outside. I come here and I have to put my coat on and take a bus to go to a meeting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or I have to walk to Camp Randall where my meetings were. Mm-hmm. So I would say that was probably one of the biggest things is just the geography does not lend itself to for people to even understand, you know, just to get that sense of community about mm-hmm. being an academic staff person.
Joan, is there anything else on your mind that you want to talk about specifically, you know, since we are here at the Academic Staff Institute, about being an academic staff person, whether it be in Green Bay or Madison?
Well, what I've tried to do over the last, I think what happened with me as a young staff person, my boss at Green Bay really kind of instilled in me in getting involved in this kind of thing, and I've done the same thing with the younger people. I think it's really important to get them involved and have them have a voice and to understand how the university operates and what they can do to help it. Because I really feel a huge sense of pride in working at the UW for all these years.
So a very strong interest in, since you were mentored, in being a mentor yourself.
Yes, very much so.
Well, Joan, I want to thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, so we are.